Hey everyone, we want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt's as the company who makes those rad all over print button downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They of course have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts, they do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
Hello there, and welcome to Thank the Maker, a podcast about heroes, princesses, scoundrels, hokey religions, ancient weapons, and all things Star Wars. I'm Adam Russell.
I'm Ryan Key, and I'm still in my dining room, so I have the air conditioning turned off, and it's really hot in here because I live in Florida.
So take off all your clothes.
Hey, I'm also hot because I live in California, but also I'm hot because I'm attractive, right, guys?
Thank yeah. you. Just a hot dude.
Hot boy.
You saw my Instagram story today.
I was like, damn, I look good. No. That's all fake confidence. Hey, I'm Nick Gambarian. What's up?
Hey, I am probably the least hot member because I am the furthest north. It's Mike Forrester. What's up, dudes?
Oh, you know, stressing my eyeballs out of my head, steam coming out of my ears.
Why? Anything cool happening? Anything neat happening over the next couple of days?
Yeah, as we said last night, we're going to the second to last, officially, right? Voyage on the Galactic Star Cruiser, the Halcyon, the soon-to-be-deceased... You know, most ambitious project that Disney parks have done in the past half century.
Oh, thought of something really Star Wars centric that's so relevant to our trip. The fact that we went on the second ever voyage and we're now going on the second to last. Yes. I just hear Han saying, you're going on to the second last one. Convenient, you know? Because I think the second to last one, just like we felt like the second one was a better bet because the first round, you know, the cast members got a chance to like run everything once. It probably got better on the third and fourth, to be honest, but still
we weren't like
the first test group. And then this is like, you know, on the last one, they're going to be like, oh, almost out of here. This is almost it. But on the second to last one, we roll up in our 19 different fits. Like I have, like you guys were all just giving me crap for
breakfast fit, pre-lunch.
They're going to be pumped, dude. The cast is going to be pumped on our vibe.
Yeah. Dude, think about every tour. Think about every last week of school. It's every show. It's the penultimate episode. It's the second to last day. It's, you know what I mean? Everybody's checked out on the actual last day.
I hope that they are a little more lax on the lightsaber rules. Because
Even if they're not, what are they going to do?
Well, we can't come back. I don't think the rules about the insurance and people getting hurt and stuff change just because it's closing. So
I mean, do we know that for sure, though?
They might still have to be strict about it, but I hope they're not.
Okay, I know we got to be quick, but why don't we propose to Bob Iger that instead of just closing it for write-off, why don't we sue them for $250 million? They got to get rid of money, right? Let's just sue them, keep it open, give us $250 million.
We'll run it.
Write that off.
We can take care of that money.
Yeah. We'll run it.
Yeah, we got it. Or we'll just move in.
Hey, kid, it's not that kind of lawsuit.
All right, let's talk about Ahsoka because not only are we going on the Halcyon next week, but I'm leaving early. My wife and I are driving.
My wife driving
down to Florida, stopping in Birmingham, Alabama on the way to go to Furnace Fest because we want to see Head Automatica. I'm DJing an emo night. So we're leaving Friday morning at like dawn. So I have tonight. Yes. So I have tonight to get this podcast up and then all day tomorrow to pack, finish my costume, pack up the Roadcaster and all that shit because we're going to, you know, do a live reaction of Ahsoka from the Halcyon.
Have you been home? Have you been still home, like with your costumes just sitting there and you're just doing what we do and just you're like, oh, it's tomorrow. Now I need to start working on it. I do the same shit.
There's lots of that, but also like indecisiveness about like what I'm doing and trying out things and sewing stuff. And like I altered my, the smuggler shirt that I got from Galaxy's Edge and it's not cool enough. So then I went searching everywhere for other, you know what I mean? It's just, and then I'm also doing band shit. Like,
it's kind of a long-winded. It's a long-winded answer to say attention deficit hyperactive disorder, but
yes,
by all means, absolutely. what you just
I sent the GIF earlier in the chat. Like, think about George McFly when he comes down the hall when Marty sees him in high school for the first time, and he's getting kicked in the ass by a bunch of people, and he's dropping his books and stuff and can't keep himself together. Those dudes kicking me in the ass, that's my ADHD internally.
Me trying right. to do Those are all the things you need to do.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that's me. Anyway, we should talk about Ahsoka, part 6, Far, Far Away, in depth. Before we get into Stolen Plans, though, Ryan Key, since you weren't here last night, give us your initial emotional reaction. I assume you enjoyed it?
I just said before we started, I wish I had a chance to watch it a second time, because all I have to offer you is raw, uncut, unbridled joy and emotion. That's all I have. It's just, it's a blur of awesomeness. I think my biggest takeaway is I desperately want to know what's in those coffin cases.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that later. Yeah.
You know, that was huge. And the costume direction for Mike, they have a name?
The Night Troopers. Yeah.
The Night Troopers. Yeah. I mean, dude, we talk so much.
Do you want to do your Dune TED talk right now or later?
No, just we talk so much about the lived in feel of Star Wars, yeah, in, you know, in Andor and Rogue One, and even Obi-Wan, I think, felt mm-hmm. more lived in than the usual OT stuff, you know. But when you saw those troopers just dirty, just covered mm-hmm. in schmeg mm-hmm. with the red, you know, samurai fabric wrapped around their armor. Oh God, man. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And I'll save my I love you, I know, because it's pretty random, I think.
Well, let's real quick, I want to get one more thing from you before we get into Stolen Plans. We could take a lot of time to talk about the score, but I figure you as an aspiring composer would have a lot of feelings and things to say about this score. New instruments, like new vibes and shit all together. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think overall it's had that killer final arc of the Clone Wars energy mm-hmm. to it. It's had the classic orchestral themes, you know, obviously one of the most amazing musical moments in Star Wars history was the end of Episode 5 when, or Episode 4, when they played just bum, 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 bum mm-hmm. at the very end. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, dude. But the synthesizers that he's working into this to give it that like Blade Runner
very
80s edge, like he did at the end of Clone Wars, it's really evident, and I'm very, very much here for it. I love how he's working in the themes from the original score, just so subtle. And tell me that the Force theme or the Binary Sunset, whatever you want to call it, has ever been more effective. Every time you hear it in this show, you're just like weeping. I mean, it's so gnarly.
It never gets old, dude.
The way he sneaks it in, it's so awesome.
Kiner's always been great about that. Like, I'm sure before we got into this Disney era of new Star Wars, that Lucas and everyone involved were much cooler about just sticking to the old school Star Wars stuff. So Clone Wars from the very beginning was, you know, scored similarly to the prequels, you know? So he used a lot of that. But as it got later, and, you know, Ahsoka's theme became more prominent and all these other things, he just got more nuanced and more skilled in the way he used it, more tasteful when, how, and when. So now, at this point, we're deep into it. It's all of this new stuff, all these new instruments, but still he knows how to just, like, nail it. He knows.
Yeah, I mean, you have the hits. You know, you have the hits and what mm-hmm. they've done from, you know, really from Rebels on, because I guess, you know, that's more Disney property, is having, you know, all of their own themes, and their yeah. those are like hits at this point too.
Yeah.
So
he's like a very talented DJ producer that gets to do sick remixes.
Yes. Yes.
He's got his own hits, but he also goes back and remixes some classics. Yeah. You know?
Last thing I'll say about the score and the instrumentation and everything, the organs, when like everything, mm-hmm. I just got goosebumps. Mm-hmm. Everything about the score when Thrawn's arrival began, how it just, it escalated.
It was with the Night Troopers. It was like kind of Halloween-y in a cool yes. way. You know what I mean?
And the
it was
chanting like, and shit. Did you hear the chant?
Yes, dude. Yes, it was amazing.
Oh, dude,
it was amazing. You on the first word, you knew what they were saying too.
Right,
it was cool.
Right.
Man.
Yeah, it was incredible.
I just could the whole. I'm so excited for this reveal of how he plays into, and now how these troopers play into the First Order, the birth of the First Order.
Yeah.
Like the whole time I was watching it, I was just like, that's what we're getting. That's where we're going. That's what's happening. It's here, new beginning, all that stuff that Baylan's talking about. Like it's, yeah.
Last thing I'll say about, before we get into Stolen Plans, Sean Iwashko, friend of the pod, visual effects supervisor or head of visual effects for like 3 or 4 different Star Trek series, right? The dude knows his shit. He made a point when he was on this podcast about, in his opinion, Star Wars has, it like falls a little bit short when it comes to really displaying the scale of ships.
Yeah.
And I pushed back and said, well, the one perfect example that proves that idea wrong is in Rogue One, the Star Destroyer over Jedha City, right? Mm-hmm. When Thrawn's Star Destroyer showed up in this one, I immediately texted him all caps, bro, how's that for f-ing scale? like how sick was that?
Yeah.
So good. Did you guys notice, or this is just my brain in the gutter, but there was one wide shot of it just parked. And for whatever reason, they chose to put the hill of the temple on the right side and not the left.
Yeah.
So it very much looked like a
phallus
organ was just rammed up in that Star Destroyer. Couldn't unsee it.
Too.
I couldn't unsee it. All they did was put the hill on the other side and it wouldn't have felt that way.
And then organs were playing.
Good for them getting some.
Yeah.
good for the Chimera. Good for
they
the Chimera
been
getting
stranded
some.
On a planet in another galaxy for a long time.
Yeah,
it's probably pretty lonely.
Think about scale too. Sorry, we should go to Stolen Plans after this. Think about, isn't like part of the Lothal Jedi Temple like on the Chimera? Think about how big that is.
Right.
It's insane.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
I wonder if we're gonna get to see that.
Yeah.
God, that would be sick. Well, it's all
sick. So we just did discussion, right? And we're skipping back to Stolen Plans.
Yeah. All right. Let's do that now. It's pretty quick. And then we have a few things to actually like discuss for real. And then we have a shorter-ish Den of Antiquities. So let's do Stolen Plans.
What have you done with those plans?
Ahsoka Part 6, Far, Far Away. Debuted yesterday, September 19th, 2023. Written by Dave Filoni. Directed by Jennifer Getzinger. She did a few episodes of Mad Men years ago, directed a couple episodes of Westworld Season 3. Dead to Me, great show with Christina Applegate. Daredevil, Outlander, a lot of TV, really good TV. Disney Plus description on this one, the search for Grand Admiral Thrawn reaches beyond the limits of the galaxy. Sure does. Starring, finally, Lars Mikkelsen as Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Hell yes.
Iman Esfandi as Ezra Bridger, also killed it. He's got a pretty short IMDb, like a couple shorts. And then recently, King Richard, the 2021 movie about Venus and Serena Williams, pretty well received. He's in that. The Night Sisters, or sorry, the Grandmothers.
The Great Mothers.
Three of them, Gerald Preston as Actrapaw, I want to say is the pronunciation of her character. She played Jackie in The Walking Dead. Claudia Black, who we mentioned yesterday, as Clotho, right? We also mentioned she was in Stargate SG-1. She played Vala Maldoran, name of her character. And she was also in a show called Farscape, another sci-fi show on the Sci-Fi Channel, right?
That sounds right, yeah.
Aaron's Son is the name of her character there. Lots of voice work also by her. And then the last mother, Jane Edwina Seymour. The name of her character is Lachesis. Here's why this is interesting. Maybe this is a reach. She has a pretty short IMDb too, but she recently played earlier this year, the Borg Queen on Star Trek Picard, which was amazing. Because the original actor who played the Borg Queen died a couple years ago, I think. So she played the Borg Queen and it was amazing. With the reach I'm getting at here, her name is Lachesis in this. Anyone who watches Star Trek or watch The Next Generation who knows the Borg story knows that Picard, when he was assimilated, his name was... Thanks, Finn.
Thanks, Finn.
He's like, you're so sick.
Locutus. So, Locutus of Borg. So, Lachesis? I don't know. Is it a reach? Like when they're just trying to come up with names and...
I have a whole thing for the Den on their names and all this stuff, so...
Oh, boy. And it's good.
Gotcha.
All right.
I gotcha.
And then lastly, West... Wes Chatham as Captain Enoch under the mask. He played Caster in the last two Hunger Games movies.
He's in The Expanse too. It's a pretty, well, it's fan-driven sci-fi show.
That's on my long, long list of things that I feel embarrassed to have not watched.
I watched a lot of it and I got stuck in like season five or something and I haven't finished.
Mm. I need to get on it. People love it. 48 minute runtime on this one.
It was good.
It was really good. Do you guys have this thing where you get anxiety about it ending?
Yes.
Like you can't.
Yes.
Yeah. 1000%.
I think I said in the epicness of episode five, when we talked about this last week, I was like, every scene, it's like I forgot that it was going to run for every scene. I was like, no.
Yeah.
Because it felt like it was going to end. Every single scene was going to go to black. You know, I was actually surprised, to be honest. Like I knew it was time for it to be over, but the scene that it ended on for me didn't feel like, oh, here it comes. This is the ending. It just kind of
same. Yeah.
It was just over.
Well, the like trauma behind it all is that we're not watching like network television and it's not 30 minutes or an hour long. It's like it could end at any point.
Right.
Anytime between like 28 and 52 minutes, it could just end. So it's like constantly you're like, is this the last scene? Is this the last scene?
Everything that feels like it's approaching like the end of a moment, you're like, oh, please don't be the end. Yeah.
We still have PTSD from Book of Boba Fett episode 2 that was like 31 minutes, right? And everyone was like, that was it? Like, it was already. But this one, I think probably before Sabine met Ezra, I think it faded to black or like had a hard cut. And I remember being like, that was probably it. And then I looked and I'm like, oh, there's 12 minutes left. This is amazing.
You just tap your Apple TV remote and it popped and you're like, oh.
Yeah, I did. I fuck. And I was like, oh, I was like, we're still.
And it's like you're ripping a Band-Aid off or something. You're like, I don't really want to see it, or I don't really want to know. But
okay, we're good.
All right, let's discuss some things. Some more in depth than others. This first one, I don't know. It's just a speculation, but it gave me a feeling, so I wanted to bring it up. The stories of the Purrgil told to younglings at the Jedi Temple in the first scene with Ahsoka and Hu Yang. They're talking about. They're kind of reminiscing a little bit, right, on the road trip. And I can't remember which, I guess it's Hu Yang that says, ah, yes, History of the Galaxy, parts 1, 2, and 3. And then Ahsoka replies, 1 being the best, of course. Did anyone else think, ooh, that's like a little meta teaser about the fact that we're getting an Origin of the Jedi movie?
I thought so.
I thought it was something, it was more cheeky, like the original trilogy is the best.
Either way, yeah.
That's how I was like, if this is a cheeky joke, I bet you there's 3 trilogies and the first one is the best.
I could see that. Yeah, it's Filoni. I can see that for sure. All right, let's talk about the Night Sisters. There's a question I have that I didn't take the time to go get an answer to, and I was also afraid that the answer would have changed immediately since this came out on Wikipedia. People of the planet Dathomir. Or in this case, Dathomir is like saying human. We're from Earth, but you know. Had we heard that suffix on Dathomir? I always said Dathomirian. Is this the first time that like official suffix has been used? Like a way to refer to the people?
It seemed new to me.
Didn't seem...
Could be wrong, but it did seem like...
New.
When she first said it, when I watched it yesterday, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, same. It kind of jumped out. It kind of jumped out like I hadn't heard it before.
I mean, if so, that's great. I think that's like a much more elegant way to say it than Dathomirian. So we learn in this episode that Peridia is their homeworld. So they left Peridia at some point and settled what we assume they took over some planet, right? Maybe all the Zabraks were the original people on the planet Dathomir. Mm. They came there and took that shit over, I would assume, right?
Interesting.
So the cool thing about them originating from an entirely different galaxy is that it just adds a little more like substance and weight and justification to the idea of them using the Force in this bizarrely different way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Their connection's different, you know, it's not the way we've seen the Jedi and Sith use it and everything else. The planet itself, I just thought was so sick. Landscapes, like just like those just huge wides.
It had the Iceland vibe.
Yeah,
like the Prometheus, rocky but still somewhat green.
Yeah,
like life is clinging on, barely.
Mixed with a little Jedha vibe, yeah. And also, you know, like seeing the statue on the Lost Island kind of thing.
I was thinking last night on the show, I said, you know, why did it seem so foreign? And I was like, has there ever been overcast in Star Wars? Because that really stuck out to me.
A lot of low-hanging clouds, yeah.
Yeah, sure. But I think what was the arc, the three-episode arc in Andor with the the Aldani, right? That arc, that was all pretty overcast, I want to say, right?
Yeah. But very green. So, I mean, that was very mountainside. This feels very like...
volcanic.
Yeah, like yeah.
And desolate, you know, right. Desolate was, I think that added to, you ever watch that old, I think it was probably in the 80s, Earth 2, which Star Wars alum, what's his face? Ryder Azadi, what's his name? that actor, he was in Earth 2.
Yeah, come on, brain. That guy.
Clancy Brown. So kind of, Clancy Brown. It definitely had that vibe to me too, just like desolate, like Earth, like life could live here, but it doesn't, you know, like that sort
life,
of thing.
Life doesn't find a way. Let's see, what else? Oh, the monument. So the monument where they landed, where they were playing with the little spheres, made it clear that the one on Cetos is, you know, it's their monument. It's just not some other... You know what I mean? Like
it's the gateway. Yeah. It's like it's the two connecting points between the two galaxies.
Two ends of a phone line.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Because, you know, we were all kind of thinking like, okay, this is just some kind of monument, you know, just like in Mando when he takes Grogu to that first one where he sits on the thing. It's just some ancient temple that's shared by, you know, you think about Stonehenge or places that for generations people have done different stuff. Now we know it's straight up, like you said, you know, it's two different phone poles with the line. strung between them. Another thing that no need for real discussion. I just thought it was hilarious the way they kept referring to Sabine as it.
Yeah,
like it reeks of Jedi. It is dangerous. It will wait in solitude. It puts the lotion in the basket. You know. Yeah.
That it reeks of Jedi is interesting because it's like, hey, you smell like Ahsoka, or is it, hey, you are a Jedi? You know.
But
the Force.
But that part of it was interesting because, like, Baylan...
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. That's what almost, I picked up.
Yeah, because, like, I thought Baylan, you know, they both look over at Sabine, but the reek of Jedi could have very well be coming off Baylan. And so that part of it, like, he almost kind of looks like there was a quick flash at him that almost said, like, he was like, oh, no, they're gonna tell me to leave.
Yeah.
Then it goes around Sabine because they both looked at her as if like, oh, Sabine kind of like shrugs. She's like, I'm not a Jedi. They do that. And then it gets revealed later that Baylan is, you know, Thrawn says, Baylan, you know, General Skull. I thought that was kind of, that was an interesting switch up. And I haven't really heard too many people talk about that, but Ryan, you picked that up, right? There was something.
I did. That's how I felt too. And I, when you're jumping ahead to the moment between Thrawn and Baylan, but so I don't forget to say it later, there was something that really jumped out at me around that scene when Thrawn is talking to Morgan, I think, and he says something along the lines of, but he used to be a Jedi, so we can assume that he is impure or flawed.
Yeah.
We can assume he's flawed. And I just thought that's another, you know, for me being the World War II, you know, history nut that I am, I felt like this real sense of, you know, throwing to that sort of just blanket, you know, racism or genocide, the idea that like he's a Jedi, so he is not a real person, you know, that terrible sense of like, you're less than, you're a species that's less that it was just a way. I think that demonstrated what an absolute mainliner Thrawn is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He is just fully devoted to the cause and believes with every cell in his body that the Jedi must be eradicated from the universe, you know?
It's weird, man.
I thought that was cool.
I don't know. We don't have time to speculate, but I just wonder what his deal is. Like, we know, a lot of other people know more about Thrawn than we do, you know? I'm sure there's a great Star Wars Explained episode on his entire history. And I mean, there are books that can be read, but for the average viewer, it's like, what's this dude's deal? You know what I mean?
There is something speaking to that. So in the first new trilogy of Zahn books, I forget which one it was in, either the second or third one, Anakin and him kind of team up and save Padme during the Clone Wars era. And then I want to say it was in the third book, he kind of deduces in a very Thrawn way that Vader is Anakin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So in this episode, he is like, we need to know everything about Ahsoka, blah, 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 who her master was. He's going to find out that, like, Ahsoka, like, there's going to be a moment eventually, whether it's in episode 7 or 8 or next season or whatever, that Thrawn is like, your master was Darth Vader, Ahsoka. You know, like, that's got to happen.
Yeah. Oh, that's sick. That's super dope. All right. What else here? Here's something that, in my opinion, like, I took as sort of a meta commentary on Star Wars Legends. This may have much deeper meaning. I'm assuming it does. But Baylan was talking about Peridia, and he said, this is a land of dreams and madness. Children's stories come to life. And Shin says, I know no such stories. And he says, you weren't raised at the temple. Stories of this galaxy are considered folk tales, some ancient past long forgotten. With good reason. Sometimes stories are just stories. Is it just me, or is this a good way to look at Star Wars Legends? You know?
I like it.
Like, you can take some cool stuff from them, but they're just stories. Lots of them are just children's stories come to life, just like goofy fanfic that Lucas was never fully on board with, but it happened. And now in this era, they're pulling the cool stuff from it and bringing it to canon.
Right. So that means
maybe it's a reach.
Well, maybe we'll probably get Jackson in the next in the next episode, because we're talking cool stuff. I mean,
I like the idea that we watch Star Wars on Earth and it is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And now the characters we've known and love have their own galaxy far, far away, a long time ago.
Yes. In a galaxy far, far away. So great.
That they watch and learn stories from and have since they were kids, just like us. I love that.
It's so dope. All right, let's talk about Baylan and Shin's conversation about power, or just overall Baylan and Shin's kind of dynamic and what's going on with Baylan. Like Ryan, you alluded to a minute ago. A couple quotes here. So Shin asks him, won't our alliance with Thrawn finally bring us to power? This is what we talked about a little bit last night. And he says, that sort of power is fleeting. What I seek is the beginning, so I may finally bring this cycle to an end. She said, and that beginning is here. And he said, if the old stories are true. So we obviously don't know what those stories are, but we speculated a little bit about the idea that it's not Thrawn. Like, he doesn't want to be Thrawn's like right-hand man or anything. He's talking about this like endless cycle of light and dark, the cyclical thing that...
Well, it's occupations, right? It's not actually light and dark. It's just occupations in some ways, right? Because like, I think light and dark, it's almost like the Empire and all of that, like, I guess the Sith and Jedi, of course, are light and dark, but like at some point in occupation, the Imperials were held up by two Force users. You know what I mean? The Republic ended up being the same thing. The First Order, same thing. So I think it's like an occupation status of that point.
Yeah.
That he understands, like, you know, these guys pop up, replaced by the next guys, you know, history. I think we're going back further.
It's interesting how much they alluded to the stories, but didn't tell any of the stories, right? Like Hu Yan started to tell the story. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It was so amazing, right? But then it cuts and that's it. You don't hear the story. And now Baylan is telling you that if the stories are true, what are the stories? Is it linked to the catacombs and the things they're pulling out of there? You know, I mean, what is this origin on this planet? Does he mean here on this planet or here in this galaxy, right? You know, when he says that, or are the origins here if the old stories are true, or and the beginning is here, she says, does that have to be specific to this system, or is the beginning in this galaxy somewhere,
right?
That, you know, the kill switch for the cycle.
Well, my response a second ago was going to be, is this just teeing it up for something much more long term, or are we actually going to get answers now? But these next couple quotes I'm about to read lead me to believe that we're going to get it, if not in this season, definitely in this series. Maybe not. Maybe it could be Filoni's movie. Who knows? But they're talking about Peridia and the Night Sisters again. And she says, they seem eager to leave this place. Maybe we should too. And Baylan says, perhaps they flee a power greater than their own. Something calls to me. Can't you hear it? Something stirs here. Can't you see it?
That's what I was talking about last night. He's like, there's something else out there.
Yeah.
It's neither Thrawn or the Night Sisters.
Something alive in here.
Yeah. So that's an unanswerable question at this point. But it does kind of support the idea that he's not trying to get power in the traditional sense. Like she's saying, it's about some like larger, different understanding of the Force and reaching like a personal power, even if it's not like power over people. You know what I mean? Like the way he talks about the Jedi Order and like liking the idea of it more than the way they actually handled it ultimately kind of lends credence to that as well, I think.
Right. I think Ryan and I are the only ones who played Fallen Order all the way through, right? And you have, Ryan, did you catch one of those statues on Peridia was very Zephian? Yeah. You have a story of, I think someone translated online was actually like, there was a part of it in one of the spots. I have to go back and find the screen grab that actually did call some reference to it. I don't know if that was just an Easter egg. I don't know if Filoni has considered bringing any of the EA galaxy into it. You know, we have all these potential big bads. I think at some point occupying Force would be like either, you know, the Zepho, the Rakatan Empire. Then we also have at the same time, like Abeloth is being, you know, we know the father and sister and the brother, but there was a mother in the EU that was kind of banished to a faraway region, right? It could be something along those lines because Filoni does like to pick out EU where he wants. Because there's a part of me that also, like on the reality side of it, going, if Ahsoka is doing very well, we have season two, right? Which I'm struggling to see Thrawn being this giant season two over arc. I think there has to be something bigger for his movie, which will come next, right? I don't know. This is speculation, but at some point, like the options, there are options out there, I think, for something bigger than just Thrawn, right? Which would
so we
sense.
May or may not be getting a season two. Like this isn't just designed to be buttoned up.
Well, I think we have
no indication.
I feel like they wouldn't roll that dice based on ratings with the how precise this story has to be.
Well, Filoni's movie was 8 years away, 7 years away.
That seems far, but I think it's within five or so, you know, like it's, I think there's at least one more season because this is, think about the pacing of Mando season three versus this. This is deliberately slow. It's very Thrawn-like, actually. There's no way it's just this is the all you're going to get before we get a movie.
The only thing we have right now is Skeleton Crew. There is nothing else coming out on Disney Plus. So I'm like, I mean, I like, you know.
There's got to be another season.
When's The Acolyte?
Acolyte is coming for sure, but that's, unless Acolyte is connected in some way, I mean.
It's High Republic.
Yeah.
Right, but that could connect to this.
Old
too.
Stories, old stories taught at the temple for generations. I mean, I don't know, but like with Obi-Wan, they said this is a limited series, right? Mm-hmm. I was out there in press. I don't know the answer to this, but you're saying that that has not been said about Ahsoka.
No,
there very well could be season two.
Yeah,
the only reason I think there definitely will be is because we've just now met the villain and there's only two episodes.
Yeah. They have to make him so badass, which we know he's badass, but like my mom doesn't, you know, he has to do something in this season and really like even worse in the next season. I feel, you know, like
next
he's gotta be a bad guy.
Must feel me.
Well, we have no idea, but we all want it. So give us season two.
Let's announce it here. Let's just announce it. Season two.
They might do like they would do the classic thing that they do, right? Like Boba Fett will return. The Mandalorian will return. Ahsoka will return. I think we're going to hang on. I think it's at this point, like, it's probably going to end on some kind of cliffhanger. Filoni is not afraid to do that. We've seen that in all the animated stuff. I guess we'll know in 2 weeks. But I think there's something out there in regards to the layout of the content stream that's happening. I guess I just can't see that we're not going to get some follow-up to this story and that it's just all going to be wrapped up in a 2-hour movie. It doesn't make sense to me because we know that Mando is supposed to fit into that too. Boba Fett's still out there. Like this universe is actually still expanding in my opinion.
And think about, we saw Ahsoka and Morgan Elsbeth and the mention of Thrawn in season 2 of The Mandalorian.
Right.
And that's, what, 3 years ago at this point? And we're just getting payoff now? I think that the long game has been laid out, and it's successful right now. So
remember how pumped we were when they said his name 3 years ago?
But I'm just saying, it really does pay off. It shows, you know, to me that it pays off that, like, you had 4 seasons of Rebels. This is a direct follow-up, and I just, you get to see, I mean, this is how creative things work usually, but you get to see that, like, when you kind of water the plant here, you know, water the seeds, like, it's worth it, you know? So you had 4 seasons of Rebels. You've been leading up to it between Mando season 1, 2, and 3 to get to this point. I don't think they just wrap it up soon. Like, this could be like within like a 10-year thing, basically, you know? Like, I don't want to wait that long.
We haven't even seen Zeb yet. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, we have, but not on this show.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of things that I'm like, sure, going to happen, but they're not. Who knows?
Oh, wait, here. It says on Hollywood Reporter, Ahsoka season 2 canceled due to tax write-offs.
Oh, strikes again.
Damn it, Iger.
God, the American financial system strikes back.
Yeah, Ahsoka season 2 scripts will be demolished with Star Cruiser building. all right. I'm going to skip ahead here a little bit. I'll mention really briefly, Sabine, this selfish choice that she's making, this very un-Jedi choice, and Jedi in some way, you know, to like roll the dice on the entire universe for her personal feelings about Ezra. Thrawn calls it out. The episode actually opens with Ahsoka and Hu Yang talking about it. That shit's going to come to a head. It's going to be crucial. We might end on a cliffhanger. They might all be stuck in Peridia, and Thrawn is off to the main galaxy, all because of what Sabine did. And also, I feel like Baylan and Shin are not on the same page. At least she isn't on his page. I think there's going to be conflict there, and I think it's all going to intertwine, and the shit's going to hit the fan. So I'm going to skip this Boken thing. Okay, question. We don't know. I have a speculation. The Night Troopers, are they all dead? Are they reanimated just the way the Night Sisters do?
I think so. I think it makes sense. The wraps on the arms are very like Night Sistery, like they're held up by magics and, you know.
Yeah, why wouldn't they just be repaired? Why would they have to have those cloths on if it wasn't Night Sister shit?
Right. So I think,
well, the only devil's advocate to that could be just a sort of, you know, a Lord of the Flies mentality. Like you know what I mean? They've been holed up here for so long that they've just become cult loyalists, and they've kind of lost their mind a little bit, and they, you know, they're wearing, I don't know. You think about those stories of,
but they're repaired. I think that's the part that's interesting.
And it also doesn't seem like Thrawn would let that shit fly.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
There is a heavy influence of magic. They clearly, the Night Sisters and Thrawn have a deal, and either Thrawn is like, give me an army, animate me an army that obeys me, and I'll give you what you need. And so there clearly is a deal here, and I cannot see Thrawn, as smart as he is, as much of a military tactician as he is, does need an army at the end of the day, right?
Where did they come from? Where were all the dead bodies? Like, where did, you know, why Thrawn survived, but they didn't, you know? I don't know. It's something to be answered.
How many, I mean, there had to be stormtroopers on the Chimera when it jumped.
Yeah,
but as far as we know, it jumped, it didn't crash. You know, so like, how did they die?
I'm assuming,
the Purrgil were wrecking that thing.
Yeah. I think too. Yeah, right. You have like the tentacles coming around and squashing that thing.
Think of the shot when they're just like bashing it, like entire chunks.
And I also brought up when I was talking about this when I did my quick Rebels reaction. The are we just like gonna ignore it and be like, well, whatever, it's a cartoon? Or the idea that all the glass was broken on the bridge and they just went into space and survived.
I think what's interesting, if like we get into the nuance of it though, like stormtrooper suits are pressurized, you can breathe in them in space, right?
Yeah.
But do they run out of air? Is that crazy if there's holes in the ship and the guys are like struggling to breathe? And then Thrawn is like, I got a half broken ship full of dead stormtroopers. The Night Sisters are like, dude, we got that. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
That's dark. Ugh. I like it.
Stacy just brought up something awesome in the chat. The bandits out there running around the planet. What if some of those are like just stormtroopers? Like, who knows, like, how this whole thing went down? Their numbers are dwindling. Maybe some are getting killed. Some are just bailing, and they're out there.
Right.
I loved the seemingly deliberate throw to the Tusken Raiders. I mean, the sounds they were making, you know, I mean, there's that idea, right, like, of an alternate Earth where, like, things are the same, but just a little bit, a twist of fate kind of altered the path, and so that, you know, it's almost the same, right? Yeah. Like, so the idea that, like, those are, you know, this is Tatooine in a different galaxy.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I love that.
Just one more point about Night Troopers possibly being reanimated. Actually, 2 points. I mean, we already had Marek, you know, who we saw green dust come out of. Like, I feel like that's a total, like, anything's that's coming back into play.
Right.
Plus, Secrets Only the Sith knew, you know, dark magic, whatever Poe said and all that. Like, really, if you really want to just make that entire line and Palpatine coming back, like, if the Night Sisters had anything to do with that, you know, like, we've been bringing in cloning, and now we're bringing in reanimation. Like, maybe the only way Palpatine came back for 5 minutes at the end of The Rise of Skywalker is some combination of all that, you know? Like,
crossing the streams. Completely tracks. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's get to the unanswerable question. The catacombs. What's in the containers? They look like coffins.
What's in the box?
Dead Night Sisters? Magic supplies? Rabbits and wands and top hats and shit? Like, what's in there?
I think, Ryan, back me up on this.
Bodies for Sheev? For Peepaw?
Night Sisters were buried in pods that hung from the trees.
Yes.
Right. Oh, that could just be a death
in that coven.
That right, exactly. That could just be like a Dathomirian Zabrak thing, like that, what they do.
For sure. So,
but you know, I just thought that was interesting. And it could,
I wanna believe it's got something to do with the cloning. That's where my head goes.
Are they just the mothers in there?
That's such a through line with
dude, are they? To what you're saying right there while you're messing with your notifications, are they potential hosts?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And the idea that Thrawn is being painted as the ultimate, you know, Joseph Goebbels mainlining party member, he knows the plan. He's got to be in on what was going on, you know, pre-Palpatine's death, like the plan to keep him alive forever and all.
Yeah.
He's top-level brass, you know?
Right.
And I feel like he's just still in on it and he's still communicating somehow from this remote outpost. And like, or he got there and was like, formulated a plan to bring it back, knowing they're going to need this. I don't know. I feel like he's so in on the plan. He has to be on the plan that this whole reanimating theme and the fact that they look like coffins and the fact that we've been like steamrolling towards this cloning explanation.
Right.
I feel like that's the only logical explanation. I mean, I could be wrong.
And we know that Thrawn is someone who legitimately appreciates different cultures. And so for him, as again, what is his biggest asset? It's his brain. It's his ability to create a tactical plan. For him to look at it and go, you mean there's a species that can reanimate the dead that have the ability outside of needing expensive machinery and all of this stuff to like to rebuild an army? Someone like Thrawn is like, I'm going to use that to my advantage 1,000%. I'm not afraid of it. I don't want to control it. I want to use it. Right. That's 100% a Thrawn move. So, I think that makes, dude, we are breaking through tonight. This is like, I'm in.
I have one more option. You ready? One more option.
I'm in.
It's a long trip back to the galaxy. It might be just snacks.
Road trip snacks.
True. Dots.
Space Cheez-Its.
Yeah, dots pretzels.
No, I have the real answer. Thrawn's master plan is to reboot Corncob TV, and those are for the new season of Coffin Flop.
Yep, I love it. For everyone who gets that.
Shot after shot of bodies busting out of shit wood and hitting pavement. All right, let's do the end of Antiquities. Hey everyone, we want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt as the company who makes those rad all over print button downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They, of course, have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts. They do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
Thousand generations.
It is the Darksaber.
Torrontogosh.
It's a Kalikori.
A Sith Wayfinder.
Dark science. Cloning. Secrets only the Sith knew.
We're just showing the ones where the bodies fall out. All right, Nick, take us into the den with the Easter eggs.
All righty. And remember, at the end of this, I have a couple of extra ones. Maybe I'll sprinkle them in there.
Yes, give us a little sprinkle.
So Captain Enoch, Mr. Dr. Goldface, the leader of the Night Troopers, has a helmet with a gold face. This is quite possibly an homage to or inspired by George Lucas's first film, THX-1138. I know there's been a lot of other references to just whether it's like Roman Empire or anything. Yeah, Gladiator. I think they're probably all connected in some way. They're all stemming from the same idea. Even George's idea probably comes from something like, you know, the Roman Empire, Gladiator, whatever.
George has never taken influence from anything.
I think it's an homage to Goldmember.
If it is the THX-1138, it's that movie's a dystopian sci-fi future with the police force of androids with chrome faces, much like the gold face we see on Enoch. My first thought last night was Destro, because
yeah,
G.I. Joe. I've seen G.I. Joe way more than THX. We've covered this before, mostly, I want to say, with The Rise of Skywalker and Kylo Ren's reforged mask, but the gold that fills the cracks on the damaged stormtrooper armor was inspired by the traditional Japanese pottery repair method called kintsugi. So bringing that back into the fold. The idea behind that is broken pottery is repaired with adhesive mixed with gold or silver powder. Highlighting the cracks and repairs is meant to show the life and tell the story of an object rather than it being discarded when damaged. Just show the cracks. You've been broken. You've been broken, baby.
But you're fixed now and ready to...
And Shauna Tripsick, costume designer for the whole show, posted earlier on her Instagram a white ceramic bowl with gold repair on it and just... The inspiration was the only caption.
Yeah, put,
so.
You mean Shauna Tripsick, who went to Mos Eisley San Diego?
That's the one.
That would be her.
Wow. Yeah.
But for real, like Judah Escalante, Marcus Depari, like these guys crushed the look of these. And like, I am so glad the costuming community is losing their minds right now. I saw that people are already like digging out old stormtrooper parts and being like, we got to bake this thing. So I know a couple of them listen. And I just want to say like, those guys crushed it. This, we talked about a little bit last night. It feels like we are in a completely new era of Star Wars. And this, we always knew that there's always like, what's Hasbro going to get out of this series? And they got a lot for the Black Series and for the...
Yeah, in like 3 years when they finally put these figures out, it's going to be so sick.
It's going to be dope, man. I'm going to buy them.
My favorite thing, Thrawn Star Destroyer, the Chimera. We see that logo painted on the bottom of it, just like we did in Rebels. In Greek mythology, the Chimera, which also... has a different spelling, is a monstrous fire-breathing hybrid creature. So way to go, dude.
Cool ship.
Loved just the seeing it for the first time. It was like seeing the Millennium Falcon in The Force Awakens or something, you know, like the reveal. You know, the ghost kind of got a reveal, but man, the reveal of the Chimera was very sick. And then it totally scored 1 second later. Totally got some from the mountain.
I got laid by the temple.
It's like, great. I'm here. Let's do it. What else do we got here? This hybrid creature is usually depicted as a lion with the head of a goat protruding from its back and a tail that ends with a snake's head. So the word hybrid is accurate.
It's a hybrid.
Okay, so in Star Wars, the Chimera is a creature with spider legs, a cluster of small snakes rising from the center of the body, and two large snake-like heads with long barbed necks. So the ship doesn't really look like that, not going to lie.
But on the bottom, the whole thing, the big painting, is that logo is that you just described.
Very cool.
And on the Roosevelt's Thrawn jacket, just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Since the finale of Rebels, the ship has been severely damaged and has been repaired with gold pieces. The damage happened during the final battle in Rebels, and when the Purgle smashed the ship, like we mentioned before, broke some windows. Thank goodness Stormtrooper kits are pressurized. So yeah, the Purgle messed that thing up, and we're seeing it get its own form of repair with all this gold.
Kintsugi, again, yep.
In the hangar of the Chimera, we see several Imperial Patrol transports. Mike, I was sending you a picture of this last night. So it's like a weird boxy version of a TIE. Where did we see that?
It looks like a submarine with TIE things around it almost.
Right. Yeah. So that goes all
like the one that imploded.
Yeah, it goes all the way back to Rebels. We've seen them on Lothal. It's got kind of the big glass front with kind of the odd wings. It almost looks like a helicopter without rotors. Yeah. And that is actually called a LAAT patrol gunship. So I was saying in live action, we've seen them a couple times, but most probably recently in Mando season 3, when we saw them, when they're, you know, they leave the Star Destroyer that they're going to loot, and then they get caught, right? And then those are two LAT patrols that are up there and catch them.
I think one of the first appearances was to catch a Jedi or the wrong Jedi when they're searching for Ahsoka and they're flying over.
Yeah. Mm.
So like two or three times in Clone Wars, and then like every other episode in Rebels, they were around.
They were like
police helicopters, essentially.
Basically,
until the Empire.
Yep.
Moving on from the Chimera, Sabine's life form scanner looks like a smaller, more portable version of the one that Hera used last episode to search for Ahsoka, which was the same one that Han used to search for Luke on Hoth in The Empire Strikes Back.
You just got to turn the knobs.
Yeah.
Just turn the knobs.
Pull the antenna.
You'll find it. You'll find them.
Yeah.
Beep, 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 beep.
It works better, too, if you put some foil on the antenna.
Nice. Nice. And on your head, thrown away.
Did you see how spot on, though, the poses and the shots were in the image that I posted on Instagram?
Yeah.
Hera and Han.
But can we also take out for a second for all the people who have been like, oh, it's like Sabine completely forgot how to fight. She's a Mandalorian. She ripped. Like, she knew she was getting jumped, and it was like, let me block a bolt with my guns. Let me block a bolt with my gauntlets. Let me take one off the chest. Like, she ripped. And then I don't think I've ever seen that before. She shoots out of her gauntlet. She shoots the whip cord, and it has an electricity that go. Did you see that?
Like a taser feature?
Yeah. I was like, what is that? That's so sick.
Yeah. And that last dude had to bug out, dude. He was scared. Was like, she whooped
I'm
ass.
Good. She pulled out the lightsaber, and he was like, oh man, okay. Mandalorian with a lightsaber. I'm going to go. I'm out.
Yeah.
I have some bonus ones that I think are really, really good. So
getting the bonus.
I'm ready.
Extra den right here. Den plus an extra $13.99.
Nice. The deep den.
Deep den, yep.
The Dathomiri are obviously not native to the known galaxy. They're from Peridia. We covered that. In this episode, they say that they rode the Purgle. And if you can remember, the first kind of like a mention of the Night Sisters was in the Book of Boba Fett when Danny Trejo's character said that the witches of Dathomir rode rancors. So they ride rancors, Purgles. Pretty sick.
So I think they used to be called the Shai-Hulud, right? I think that's what they
Different show, different podcast.
Okay, right. God.
Cross my streams.
Okay, this goes, this is pretty cool. It's like dead on, like right on the nose, just stolen from Greek mythology. So the Great Mother's names, Lachesis, Clotha, and Actropa, are known as like the three fates. They were divinities in Greek mythology, and they presided over human life. And together, the fates represented the inescapable destiny of humanity. In Greek mythology, the fates were divine beings who personified the birth, life, and death of humankind. I'm going to keep going. This next part is amazing.
Here we go.
These three fates were also known as Morai.
Whoa.
Ahsoka's owl friend. Very sick.
Damn.
That's wild and deep.
Okay, so not Locutus of Borg.
Yeah. So when you were saying all that, I was like, but that could also just be stolen from, you know, they're all stealing from the same. One other thing. So this is maybe not necessarily for the den. This should have been in the discussion. But the last few lines of this episode, the mothers speak of a thread of fate and a thread of destiny. Mm. Like as if they're getting information from something, you know? So I'm really interested to see what the thread is here. Because they say thread of, and one time they say fate, and then thread of destiny. So
I love the way they talk about thread and the cloth, and you know, it's part of like the way they speak and the way that like the metaphors that they use, all wrapped up in, pardon the pun, their look and their culture. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
And the night troopers are all wrapped in threads and cloth.
Yeah. It's all consistent. It's a pretty sick theme.
I can't believe that we're getting Star Wars like that. I mean, can I just say again?
It's insane,
like,
dude.
That was nuts what we just saw. And we previously had saw Anakin Skywalker back as Darth Vader. And we were like, that's it. We just saw Captain Rex. That's peak. Like, that was it. And then I watched this episode. I'm like, did I actually like this episode more than the one that just showed Darth Vader? Yeah. I was like, what is happening right now?
Back to
all
back.
Assault. Yeah. An assault on our senses.
And then next week, we get to watch it on the Star Cruiser. What is happening?
All right, we got to wrap this up.
I love you.
I know.
Mike, go first. Give us your favorite moment, quote, scene, whatever.
You guys know that I'm a costume guy. I mean, we saw lots of things. The other thing I appreciate too, in the way that I watched it, when I watched it again, Thrawn's suit, like he looks pretty like put together, right? Mm-hmm. That thing is fried. Like it has pockmarks and it's like frayed in certain parts. And I didn't realize it on the first watch. And I was like, dude, Shauna's team is on it. But I would say anytime we get to see new troopers that serve a purpose that aren't just background, I'm in. So I would say my favorite thing from this episode, as much as there was a ton of stuff exposition that happened, costumes crushed it. The Raiders crushed it. Seeing the live action Night Sisters crushed it. That's my favorite part.
Nick,
over under, are we going to see a Night Trooper at New York Comic Con? It's plenty of time, right?
Yeah,
for sure. Take the over.
Probably.
Okay.
Somebody's working on one right now.
It should be me.
Honestly, my favorite part for a lot of reasons was finally seeing Ezra. I think that his performance, which was, you know, pretty small so far, just got me so excited for the gravity of his character being back. The performance was amazing. I don't know if we're going to get the conversation between Sabine and Ezra to be like, you know, Sabine's going to be like, well, I came back and I'm with Thrawn. You know, like he's probably on the run from Thrawn. And now they absolutely face being stranded there. So I don't know, but just seeing Ezra finally and, you know, the casting I think is dead on. And like I said last night on the pod, I mean, Sabine and Ezra are possibly the two best cast animated characters into live action ever. So seeing Ezra Bridger, love it.
William Ryan Key.
I think like the obvious one for me should be Thrawn's reveal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was epic, but there's a really random thing in this episode that resonated with me big time, and I've been thinking about it all day. Started with, do we know the name of the creature that she was riding, this sort of like horse-dog hybrid?
A howler.
Howler?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Boom.
I didn't pick that up in the episode, and I didn't get to rewatch. I probably would have got it the second time, but either way. So my dog is, we call him around the house, a shadow dog, because he's a cattle dog, and he has to be herding us at all times, and he's just, I mean, he is glued to my leg. It doesn't matter if I just walk from the kitchen to the bedroom and back. He can't settle unless we're settled, you know? And so the dog-like qualities that they gave that creature were so spot on, and like the nuance that they really paid attention to developing that creature and giving it a personality. And I think they focused on this like dog-horse hybrid. Like it kind of was doing like the shaking horse face thing, but it was also like licking its chops constantly like a dog. But there was the scene where Sabine was like told it to, that she was, you know, she was like, no, like you're not coming with me anymore because you abandoned me. as soon as it left frame, I knew it was going to come back. And yeah. I don't know if I knew it was going to come back because of the show. And it's like, that's a good, you know, like a bit in film, or if I was like, well, Jax would come back. My dog would come back. He's coming back.
Yeah.
So, but that led to kind of, I think, what might be my favorite thing. And this probably could have gone in the den, but I figured I'd wait until now because I didn't know if you were going to bring it up, Nick. But the scene where Sabine comes across the little turtle guy for the first time mm-hmm. is just Leia and Wicket.
Right.
It's the same scene.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm not going to hurt you. She puts her gun down. You know, like that whole thing just, I mean, as Leia things do to us, it really hit me. Like just the, I don't know, the homage that was paying to that scene of her encountering a new species that was very scared for the first time. So I to not pick an obvious one, like, yes, obviously my favorite thing in the episode was Grand Admiral Thrawn, but that's everyone's favorite thing, you know? So I don't know. I just thought that was a really special scene that had a killer throwback to Return of the Jedi. And I loved the connection between her and the Howler.
I think all that stuff was great. And I love how going all in, not being afraid to do weird alien stuff, it pays homage to and like stays in the spirit of original trilogy, old school George Lucas. You know, I thought it was great. He pulled it off. They landed
you figure
it.
Out how they put those clothes on with that shell on their back. You let me know.
I've been thinking about that because I think we said that it was like the shell was part of their exoskeleton, but yeah. the clothes, they put clothes on though.
Now obviously the shell probably just comes off when they want it to, but then like, why would they be wearing them all the time when they're cooking dinner for their kids? You know, I don't know.
Because they're cute.
It's a thing. Man has pondered. A reason to make a David Cross reference and I'll take it.
The only thing that we missed also in the den, by the way, which I did remember.
Do y'all's people eat oatmeal?
Go ahead.
When the Grand Inquisitor cuts Ezra, he got the cut on his face.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ezra's got that in the show.
Nice, as he should.
Perfect. I think he's also still wearing his like wrist gauntlet looking thing. Pretty sure.
Let's rewatch.
My favorite, let's hurry up and go. I was really into that scene with the turtle people as well, but I can't.
Hermit crabs.
But I can't not give it to the Thrawn entrance, the reveal, because there's never been something so haunting in Star Wars since I was a little kid that like shook me how epic and terrifying.
It was on par with Emperor Palpatine coming off the ship in Return of the Jedi for the first time. It was fully on par with that. And remind yourself, it was on par with freaking Return of the Jedi mm-hmm. showing you the Emperor, the mastermind of the entire saga for the first time. And it was in a 45-minute episode of television.
Yes.
It was on par with that.
And this,
what a time to be alive.
The score like really just put it, I mean, I'm not going to compare that score to the Imperial March. Hearing that in all its glory, you know, for the first time. But you're right. That's what it did, and it broke new ground, like on many many levels. So it has to be that's my favorite. All right, amazing episode. Like we keep saying, we're going to watch next week's together on the Galactic Star Cruiser on the Halcyon.
Wow.
Maybe streaming from there a reaction to an episode for the first time. We're just going to go ahead and claim that, whether or not that's true.
Let's stream it from the bridge, like late at night.
Take advantage of the whole TV.
Like, yeah, yeah. Let's take over the whole thing.
Yeah.
We're just going to have one episode next week because there's too much going on. We won't even get off the thing until Thursday morning. So then I'm driving. It's going to be one episode. It's going to be a good one. It'll be a reaction. We'll probably have space cocktails.
Listen, you're going to want to like watch it on YouTube. We're going to literally be, you're going to want to see this.
Of the day.
Yes.
This is my Ahsoka wearing outfit. Everyone knows that.
Be honest, you just gave me more of a reason to be like, oh, then I'm totally fine because I need to do a change. I'm going to do a wardrobe change for the stream.
New pair of pants.
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Great.
All right. So if you aren't already subscribed, subscribe. Do the bell thing. There's a bell apparently for alerts. Either way, if you're subscribed, you'll see the time for that. I'll try to stay ahead of it. I'm gonna have to. I can't mess with computers while we're on there. So I will schedule that ahead of time. We'll probably do it about the same time that we usually do, within a half hour after watching the show. It's going to be epic. MoshEisley.com for Mosh Eisley tickets, October 14th in New York City. Dudes, thanks for being here. Patrons, thanks for being patrons and hanging out with us in the chat. And until next week on the Galactic Star Cruiser, may the Force be with you. If you enjoy Thank the Maker, you can support us by following and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Or you can support us directly at patreon.com/thankthemakerpod, where you can get access to our Discord server, exclusive content, exclusive merch, our recording live stream, and more. Our patrons quite literally make Thank the Maker possible.